You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus streaming service. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 4, Chapter 12, titled The Siege. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
There's a lot of disappointed Star Wars nerds today. They're really thinking they're going to go right to Ahsoka. See, that's some rookie Mando shit, thinking that you're going to go right to the next thing without him being waylaid by a side quest. You really think just because the main quest moved forward a plot point that we're going to know? No, have you guys never played an MMO before, or a role-playing game?
Oh,
that's not how this stuff works.
No, that's
so I knew as soon as he landed and Cara Dune's there and Grief. And they take him to the bar and they show him the children there. I'm like, oh, there's going to be some threat to this town that has to be exchanged for his ship getting Mon Calamari'd. And I expected all this. I do think that there is some weird tonal clashes from what is obviously, you know, young people's entertainment to like some pretty heavy themes that I'm not sure if they're doing that as a deliberate, like, you know, guy getting blinded in one eye and getting stuck in a 350-year employment contract. Employment contract, like Grief is low key running a fish boy slave camp out here. No wonder he doesn't want the New Republic in, and messing up that system. But like, there's some like dark, gritty gangster bounty hunter shit happening, but it's all very, you know, and the way the stormtroopers kind of get slaughtered for comedy is wild in contrast to other kind of tone stuff. But overall, some really good space, or I guess not space combat, spaceship combat.
Yeah, yeah.
Vehicular in atmosphere. Combat. Good vehicular combat. What'd you think?
I agree. Like, I enjoyed this episode a lot. It's directed by Carl Weathers, which I thought was interesting. I can't remember if he's directed one of these before, but I saw that and either. I was like, oh, okay, not bad, Mr. Weathers. I thought there was some lackluster.
No problem with the directions. I didn't think.
Yeah, there's some lackluster action, I think, in the hallways of the Imperial base. Like, they're just running forward, shooting stormtroopers, running forward again. And they did it maybe one too many times, too many shots. So, and I attribute that to directing, but like, that vehicular stuff was awesome. I really like seeing the Marauder and the TIE fighters and the Razor Crest swooping in at the last second to save them. All that stuff is really cool. And there's a lot of like, I guess I was surprised by an episode that's a mainline episode, and you knew it was going to be a mainline episode when they started the recap, right? Because you've got, they took you all the way back to the fucking beginning with the Fishman, with the Mithril. You're like,
I thought
okay.
The same thing. Like, this guy is at strap in when I'm seeing a picture of him being frozen in carbonite. Like, what the hell?
Right. And then Moff Gideon shows up, and you're like, okay,
sure,
this is going to be big. And it was, but it's all like background information, right? The plot has not moved forward at all in this episode.
It's like, ticked forward like 5 minutes, it feels like. Like, we have out of this 40-minute episode, we got 5 minutes of maybe new revelations about midichlorian counts and cloning tanks and
God, we got to talk
racks
about that.
There's millennials and Gen Xers everywhere triggered.
Hell yes. And they won't even say the name of it, which is kind of funny to me.
They're treating it, it's the M word in Star Wars,
the M count.
It's the most offensive thing you can say to a Star Wars fan, apparently.
Which, to be fair, midichlorian, it's a mouthful. Like, I don't want to say that every time.
Sure.
I'm just referencing a number, the M count.
Sure.
But the plot, that's all like background stuff that's been happening, right? Not stuff that's new that's happening. So Mandalorian's no closer to his goal. The only thing that really happens from a plot perspective is that Moff Gideon gets a bead on the Razor Crest again, right? With that tracker that they put on there. For a mainline episode, I was shocked that not much actually happened to push the plot forward, but we got a lot of info, a lot of new cool info.
Yeah, we got a lot of info, and I think there's some other subtle things like getting kind of like the New Republic's, like we haven't gotten a New Republic perspective. The New Republic Mountie, the Lone Ranger X-Winger, the lone X-Winger out here investigating crime and kind of getting the perspective of like, there's a lot of bad shit that I think's connected that no one takes serious in the core world. And you kind of think of like, oh, how does this connect to, you know, essentially you've got in 10 short years, you're going to have a situation where you got the resistance running, the legitimate government called the resistance running from the New Order, which is essentially a big, bad empire that's taken over the galaxy again. Yeah. And it's painting a picture of the New Republic being overwhelmed, not able to do all the jobs that they have to do. Not able to have enough and not able to suppress this empire that's being reborn.
I mean, big shocker, right? Like the ragtag Rebel Alliance wasn't able to coalesce a galaxy-wide government in a short enough time span to overwhelm essentially an empire that's lost a leader and a weapon. Like, really? That's a big shocker. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's revolutions are tricky business, kids. For every one that goes well and leads to long-term peace and prosperity, there's 100 that just sets off long chains of bloodletting and destruction of property and value. And just
ask the French about that. Bad.
Yeah, like history books full of them.
Yeah.
But you're right. All that, a lot of stuff is kind of like color to the world, which I guess it needs. Like I'm really fascinated to find out the details of like this, you know, postbellum period of galactic history. You know, at Star Wars, there's not very many where you've got, we're in between wars. So, and I guess my Ahsoka was hoping that the Mando would struggle more with his religious identity or his cultural identity after getting that big revelation of last year. But who's he going to talk to about it with? It's going to, I guess the next time he'll either have to get back up with Bo-Katan or maybe hook back up with the armorer, like somebody that he actually has some kind of tie to Mandalore. But that's the thing I'm really in for. Mando coming to grips with what it means to be a Mandalorian, what it means to have honor and integrity and, you know, connection to your background and a mission, all that thing. I think that stuff is really interesting.
Yeah. All that's percolating and I'm sure it'll bubble up eventually. Why don't we get into the recap?
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's do it.
We start off with Mando's busted ass ship being repaired by Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda manages to cross some wires and causes a little more damage, I think. And so they decide to go back to Navarro.
I thought this was a really cool scene. It reminded me of like Yoda bent over into Luke's, you know, packs and like just tearing shit up and throwing stuff like, you
absolutely
know, like, nothing in Yoda's history suggests that he would have any kind of affinity for. I know this isn't literally Yoda. I thought that's cute, and the fact that like Baby Yoda is whatever level of child that this show needs at any time. Baby Yoda is sometimes 6 months old, sometimes he's 6 years old. And I thought in this episode they shied him a lot more towards this, the kind of naughty 6-year-old than the actual baby. But yeah, him trying to repair the ship and the Mando's, like, you know, he gets electrocuted, but of course Baby Yoda's not going to die. And his just dry will is worth a shot. Right.
No, there's a lot of, like, you know, R2-D2 sticking it in the wrong socket kind of vibes from this. There's a lot of Han and Chewie shouting at each other during
this scenes. Goes there, this goes here, right?
Trying to get at a lot of that stuff. A lot of old Star Wars mixed in with this scene, the vibe.
Although, as a father, I felt like Mando's level of patience he showed in the scene was pretty amazing. Uh-huh. And like him cleaning up Baby Yoda's puke at the end of the episode. He's really leveling up as a dad, as a man Dadalorian. Yeah. That's what you call it, Dadalorian.
Dadalorian. We also see him, I guess the logistics of him eating and drinking with that helmet on that he can't remove. He sort of lifts it up, which just thinking, can we not do that for masks at restaurants right now? Like, do we have to go fully maskless in a restaurant, or can we just, you know, nudge it up a little bit?
Oh, Jim. Take a bite. You're still on this mask thing. Come on.
I'm a mask diehard.
I'm gonna get a full level one biocontaminant suit like the Mandalorian. Did you notice every time he lifts his mask, it makes like a pssst, like there's some kind of seal being broken?
Really? But he's just wearing like an undergarment, right?
like last episode, I talked myself in like, well, this isn't a pressure sealed suit because, you know, obviously he's drowning. But now I'm like, well, shit, is it? But then I guess like it reminded me of like there's this line in Futurama where Professor Farnworth's being asked about the Planet Express, the spaceship, because they have to go on a water planet. They're like, well, how many atmospheres of pressure can the ship sustain? He's like, well, it's a spacecraft, so somewhere between 0 and 1, like, you know, something designed to keep 1 atmosphere of pressure contained might not even not leak 30 feet under the water. It might leak like a sieve because it's not designed. So maybe the Mando is like a light pressure suit, but like you get 30 feet and you're fighting a squid beast and it starts leaking and you drown. But I thought it was weird. They talked me into it not being pressurized and it seemed like it was.
So is that like a effectively a gas mask sort of thing? Like you can't get particulates into his suit?
I mean,
like it's not going to protect him in space, right?
I always assumed that Boba Fett was wearing a spacesuit, and I always assumed that like stormtroopers had like all the material said they had like part, you know, that the armor protected from like biological and chemical warfare, but I saw them gassed last episode. So
yeah,
maybe the Empire can't afford the filters change, you know, those things. Right. Yeah, it's one thing to have the helmet, but if you don't change the filters every six hours of exposure, then they're worthless
for sure. So we were back on Navarro now, and Cara Dune clears a bunch of Aqualish interlopers out of the forge room. And she takes this, I think it's a sack full of cash, to return it to its rightful owners.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the beginning of this episode, you talked about some darker adult stuff. I feel like the butchering of this weasel creature was more intense than I was ready for.
I'm like, there's no way there, because there's no way they're going to cut this thing's head off. But then I noticed it was animatronic, and that guy with the cleaver I'm like, well, maybe they will. Like, Jesus, I don't know. But what's funny is, I don't know who these guys are. They're Aqualishes. And I kind of like am prejudiced against Aqualishes, because one of the first memories I have of being terrified in a theater is them menacing Luke Skywalker. That guy on Mos Eisley, you know, my friend here doesn't like you. Yeah. And getting his face, and he's got this terrifying kind of spider looking face, and gets his head or arm cut off. So I feel like these guys are up to no good every time I see him. But still, they stole some cash. And Karen just comes in there and murders them all.
Yep.
As the marshal. Okay. All right.
Thievery is punishable by death here.
Apparently. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, got some like fucking Vlad Dracul type of justice code going. But I don't know if that's what it takes to keep the school open. And that's the whole moral threat here, that we have an Imperial garrison that has a whole bunch of high-tech weapons and people are stealing. There's bands that are going in and running this black, and I'm like, what kind of operation is Gideon running that they can't keep, you know, like are he's letting Aqualish smugglers onto his clone dark trooper base?
Yeah.
To steal shit? Really?
Wild.
Yeah.
I you felt think like it'd be more heavily fortified.
Yeah, like the black market rationale made sense until I realized, oh shit, this is actually a big, big deal base to Moff Gideon. This is not like some kind of abandoned outpost.
Yeah, they had fooled me. By the time they revealed that, like the thought of the black market stuff was out of my head. And I was thinking, oh God, this is actually a significant base. I didn't even think about
it.
Me like,
too, on my second pass through, I was like, wait, that's the rat. How did these Aqualishes, is this part of my, but you know what? It all could, I don't know. This could be like some kind of fourth dimensional chest and it's involved in like getting the Razor Crest bugged and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Give up your clone facility just to get the Razor Crest bugged. I guess you need the child. How much does he need? I almost called it the child. How much does he need Baby Yoda?
Infinite. Like, I think he's an infinite need. Like, that's like, now that we know that his blood with the M count is crucial to whatever the fuck they're injecting to people, like, I think he's got infinite demand for Baby Yoda. He will trade an unlimited number of clone trooper bases or whatever to get one Baby Yoda so he can start keep extracting its blood.
Well, is it like something where if he, you know, he needs Baby Yoda and he needs these cloned vat things and he needs whatever like dark trooper shit's going on. And if he loses any one piece of that, the whole plan falls apart? Or is Baby Yoda like the linchpin of the whole thing?
I think
thing?
It's the linchpin because he can always rebuild a base and make more clones, but there's only the one Baby Yoda as far as we know.
Probably right. I don't know. Jedi seem like a dime a dozen, just saying, but... even sure. Post Yoda, they seem to
every
dime a dozen,
backwater but... outpost. There's going to be three or four failed drunken Jedi hiding in robes. Yep. Yeah, sure, sure.
All right,
the most ineffective political purge of all time.
So Mando lands on Navarro, where Kara and Grief are waiting for him. They take him back to their cantina, which has been turned into a school, and they place Baby Yoda in class and leave him there. Baby Yoda is denied snacks by the neighboring student. So Baby Yoda uses the force and takes them. This is bullying.
I'm on board. I'm on board this use of force.
Bully Yoda.
This child. Is he?
He's taking this kid's lunch money. Like, not even the money. He's just taking the lunch.
This child looks at this other child and its big sad eyes and won't share one cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Use the force. Bring balance to the classroom.
Bring balance. Wow. Wow.
I mean, yeah. Baby Yoda worships his belly. I'm sorry. He just does. Like, and if I wasn't gonna cancel him over attempted genocide of a frog species, stealing a couple blue cookies from some snot nosed punk. On Navarro,
we've seen the penalty on Navarro for thievery, right? Cara Dune, sure. murder. If you're grief Karga, it's 350 years of slavery. 50, like, minimum, watch out, Baby Yoda, watch your back, because they're coming for you eventually. You steal enough cookies.
Yeah. See, Yoda's always bragging about 900 years old he'll be, but you don't know that he spent the first 850 years in Supermax. He was locked fucking down because he kept on eating eggs he shouldn't and cookies he shouldn't. So he. So I always brag about how fucking old he is, but you know,
yeah. But what kind of life have you lived?
Yeah, hard time. Hard time is what Yoda was doing.
it's funny to see like the Imperial faction, the fortification here was really the only thing standing in the way of like education and you know, a decent life for these people. It's like. Yeah, I guess they had
got all these black market. Yeah, all these black market e-web thieving gangs are just ruining things. There was a couple background details I thought was interesting. There's a statue of IG-11 in the background in like the town square. Yeah, his heroic sacrifice of wading through the lava pools and saving the marshal and their, I guess, new governor was not unrecognized by the populace. I thought that was pretty cool.
It's unrecognized by me. I didn't realize. I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's like when they're walking from the Razor Crest to the cantina. It's like just in the back. It's a background detail. You have to look over to like the Mandalorian shoulder. But I also thought Grief's opinion that the Republic should leave the Outer Rim alone. Mm-hmm. I do think that, like, I don't think that Grief is a good guy. I think that Grief is at best a little bit more morally ambiguous Lando Calrissian.
Okay.
And I wonder if the Mandalorian's moral code will have him on his wrong side again. Because I don't know, like this guy he's wanting to take advantage of this kind of gray market opportunity. And that always seems like it's not going to go the way you think it would.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, I don't know, I guess like how morally flexible is he? Is a super relevant question because we've seen him be pretty flexible. Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see how that character develops, or if he develops, I assume he'll be back. But I guess
at some
we'll
point,
out.
Sure.
I was also wondering with this Baby Yoda in school stuff with him stealing the cookies, if this is meant to like say, hey, there's a dark side to this kid having force powers. And if they're trying to say something about like, it depends on the guidance he has, how he's going to grow up.
It's going to be a gray Jedi, like Kyle Katarn at best. But yeah, he's already force choked Cara Dune. Arguably, maybe for self-defense or defense of the Mandalorian, but now he's stealing cookies. He's going to force lightning's next.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right from cookies to lightning.
Hunger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Mando's taken to Grief's headquarters, I guess. I don't know. The marshal's office. I have no idea where they're at here, but there's this Mithril there who, you know, we saw in the first season. And he's working off some kind of debt that he's got for embezzlement, I think, is what it comes down to. Like, he was Grief's accountant.
Crooked books.
Yeah.
Yeah, crook in the books.
And then Kara and Grief ask Mando to help them with clearing out an old Imperial base, and he agrees.
I also like the Mithril, like, releasing spores or whatever he did, like, from seeing the Mando. Like, that's his stress reaction. I thought that was kind of funny. But it is weird that, like, this is now the second named sentient character. Like, the Ungot also talked about that he served several human lifetimes in some kind of prison facility.
Yeah.
Holy shit. It's bad to be an alien in the Star Wars universe post-Empire, you know, pre-Empire and post-Empire, it seems like. Because you were asking, like, what does that mean? That, like, how old does Grief live? He's a human, right?
Yeah, if he dies, you know, 50 years into this sentence, like, is Mithril indebted to the organization that he set up?
See, like, this is starting to sound like, you know, contract slavery. I don't know.
Yeah.
Indentured servitude. That I feel like the Republic needs to get out here and straighten this shit out.
Mm-hmm. I like the callback to the carbonite sickness. You know, he says he can't see out of his left eye still, which we know, obviously, Han Solo blind after coming out of the carbonite. Yeah,
sure, sure.
Good stuff there. And then they speed off toward the base while discussing the plan, their plan to blow the reactor. And they pull up to the front door and they cut through it. But Mando, in the meantime, jets off to the top of this base and he tosses a stormtrooper off. And they all go up the elevator to meet him. And I guess, like, also Grief says they have to drain the cooling lines, so that's kind of their mission, and they make their way inside.
They're going to make the lava conduit go critical, essentially.
Yeah.
Which is a cool concept. They do relentlessly bully this fish man and threaten him with death, and like, oh, I'll take 100 years off your contract if you risk your life for me. It's like, oh, boss, my water vest is running out. I'm a fish species. It's in a desert. It's a lava field. And they're like, he's like, well, you can either do this or walk back over to lava field. I'll never make it. It's suicide. Well, I guess.
That's
Grief guy. That's some shit. That's some fucking bullshit.
I thought Cara Dune was a proficient gambler. Did we not see her? Like, first time we meet her, she's gambling up a storm in some off-world cantina equivalent.
I remember her drinking, like, she's doing that Marion from Ravenwood. She's like drinking guys under the table, or maybe arm wrestling.
Okay, maybe it was arm wrestling.
I thought it was like
maybe
some kind of
gambling.
Feat of personal strength or constitution.
Gotcha. Okay, well, she's a bad bluffer because, like, oh, we're gonna leave you in the lava fields and let you burn when the lava comes.
Right.
Well, your only transportation is also in the path of those lava flows. Like, you have to get back to the town, right? And they just left the speeder out there. So this is a bad bluff. He should have called it.
It's maybe a bad plan. Not a well thought through plan.
Also, just say, nah, I'll take my chances with the lava flows. Sit in the speeder. If the lava flows come, speed the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hightail it.
Not a good bluff. But they point out this Trexler Marauder, which I don't think is any previous Star Wars kind of thing.
This was my crown jewel of Star Wars toys.
Oh, shit.
It was the only Kenner product, I think, or at least the first, that was not actually seen in any Star Wars film. But it's a toy line, and it's called, an Imperial Transport. And it was really cool. You could push a button on top of it, and it would play, like movie accurate like blaster noises, or like a stormtrooper saying there's one set for stun, like lines from A New Hope. And there's like three pods on each side that hold a stormtrooper, and they could have their rifles out. And there was like two swing open doors that you could pilot, and a guy you could put in a gun turret. And there was like a little prison compartment in the back. It was rad. It was really cool. And it had wheels, so it looked like it kind of would hover over.
It was like the Turtles fan of Star Wars.
And I immediately, and it was great because like I didn't have a ton of Star Wars toys, but I had a bunch of action figures, and I could hold almost all my dudes in there. And it also was big enough to act as like a base if I needed like a base to for some guys to hold or assault. And so I immediately recognized that, like, as soon as I saw the nose sticking out, I'm like, holy shit, that's one of those old Imperial transporters. And sure enough, on Wikipedia, that's a particular model of this one. And it all goes back to a 1979 Kenner toy.
Nice. So
I had an intense wave of nostalgia in this episode.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of that in the show.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they take the security office and they shut it down and then make their way to the heating shaft where the cooling lines are. Mithril shuts down the cooling system. I'm calling him Mithril. I don't think he has a name. He's an unidentified Mithril, which is his species. But that dude shuts down the cooling system, and they make their way to the exit, dodging stormtroopers along the way. I feel like we could continue to the end of this with the message and everything, if you want.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, they catch some Imperials doing some weird experiments in their lab and decide to investigate. And they find a message from Dr. Pershing that indicates they've been trying to induce force powers with blood transfusions, and that Moff Gideon is alive.
Yeah, and there's like these tanks of vaguely humanoid shapes that may or may not be twisted, or they may just be in a weird floating position. I'm not clear if they're alive, like if these are the failed experiments where they've tried to inject blood high in M count. Now, this is it's not much of a leap, but we're assuming this is a midichlorian count, because if you'll recall, old Ben Kenobi, when he's a young man, freaking out that Anakin Skywalker's M count was even higher than Master Yoda's, who previously had the all-time high midichlorian count. Starting to feel like this is a clone of Yoda. Like, that's been a lot of speculation, and people talk about it. Maybe the dates don't quite work out, but like, you know, he looks like a baby Yoda, got an M count of a baby Yoda, sounds like a baby Yoda, starting to look like a baby Yoda.
Is it,
you got a baby Yoda, full on baby Yoda situation?
Any idea who might have cloned baby Yoda? Are we talking about an Imperial clone?
It's gotta go back. It's gotta go back to the, well, and then this this Dr. Pershing, who is the message that we received. We talked about this last episode in the feedback that he's got a Kamino cloner pouch on.
Yeah.
Patch. Yoda went to personally pick up the clone army after Kenobi, you know, investigated and found out that they're doing. So I'm guessing
he did get that jab in the leg with that umbrella, which was pretty conspicuous.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking that they waited for one of his like three gray hairs to fall out of his ears. Uh-huh. And they just cloned it based on like some kind of shed cell from that. But I guess that's got to be it. Those are the broad kind of like clues that we've got. And it's got to be some kind of, but yeah, I'm getting like 90% certainty that this is an actual clone of Master Yoda.
Yeah.
And what that means. And They had a bunch of his blood, but not too much because he's so small. They could only suck so much of his Yoda juice out before he'd die.
It's true.
It's so pitiful. Yeah. And they've run out, and they're completely stalled until they get more Yoda blood.
Yep, that's how it goes. I know that's been a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just never enough Yoda blood. So I don't know. So Mando goes after the baby, after Baby Yoda, because he realizes it's probably in jeopardy. The other three shoot their way out of the base to meet him back in town. I was not a fan of these scenes. I think there are too many hallway shooting scenes, and they're not very inspired.
And it's also very much a piece of what we saw last episode, too, of running through hallways and, oh, the Stormtroopers can't hit shit unless they're aiming at the Mandalorian, and then they precisely can target his Beskar armor.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that this episode. There's a lot of that last episode. Yeah.
I guess what do you do, though? Like, you can't kill any of these characters, right? And you got to get them out of here.
A establishing scene of, like, I Mando following him out and seeing him do his jetpack stuff. That's pretty. Actually think that was pretty cool. It really kind of plotted with the other three. And I think you needed to see one scene of them, like, you know, like running through. And then you get to the Marauder because you understand, you know, like, okay, well, we saw them running through a corridor. Where are they running? The place they came from to get back. You know, here's the Marauder. They're pinned down. Like, I from the Marauder on, I thought it was pretty exciting.
Oh yeah,
but yeah. My appetite for stormtroopers poorly shooting and cramped hallways is fully sated right now.
For sure. So yeah, they get to the exit. Their escape is blocked by some stormtroopers. So Kara commandeers the Marauder, drives it off the platform into the canyon, and they're chased by a few stormtroopers on speeder bikes. They fight him off.
I really liked the Mad Max aspect of, like, the way they, like, rode downhill after the Marauder. I thought it was really funny that, like, this guy's been worried about his prize speeder the whole episode, and then the Marauder just kind of flattens it. Mm-hmm. But it's already, you know, that's worth a lot of money, so it's already taken a sting out of it.
Oh, for sure.
I did not know you could do that with, like, a heavy tank, just run it off a 500-meter cliff.
Apparently this one, yeah, you can. Although I would say that the way it falls is funny. Like, that's just not how physics works. It's like in The Walking Dead where that van flips off that bridge. It's clearly going to land on its top, right? It's going to totally flip over, but then it lands on its wheels or whatever. Stupid.
Yeah.
This would have landed right on the front. And
I think it would have been cooler if they just, because this was like not a sheer cliff because we saw the speeder bikers go down. I thought it would have been cooler if they just like, rode it, you know, like way too fast and like runaway freight train down the side of that, like the face of the, what is it, 70 degree cliff?
Yeah.
That'd have been really cool. And then to see the speeder bikes do it. Yeah. But then you wouldn't have smashed into his speeder and flattened it and had that little haha moment.
I thought the coolest moment was the stormtroopers following them down the face of the mountain and like getting caught up, getting hung up on rocks and exploding. Like,
yeah, two of the stormtroopers, of course, immediately explode in the Han Solo asteroid maneuver. Yeah,
yeah, no, I loved it. I thought it was great. And then apparently,
I was going to say one other thing is that even the fish man, this is how pathetic these stormtroopers are. Even the fish man notches a stormtrooper kill on his belt. Shooting blind over an obstruction, just like pew, pew, like Cyril Figgis suppressing fire from Archer. And he takes out two or three of these guys. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Come on. Can the stormtroopers shoot the broadside? They're, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Only Imperial stormtroopers are this precise. What the fuck? It's the biggest meme in... Let's have some stormtroopers can shoot some people.
Yeah. No, Obi-Wan was an idiot. Apparently.
Can stormtroopers ever take cover? As far as I can tell in this show, only good guys take cover. Imperial stormtroopers come pell-mell around corners in the middle of things and say, we've got them! And then they get drilled by turbo laser bolts.
Yeah, it's not just their accuracy. It's just poor training all around, I think.
Yeah. Boy, the flash clone training they get up to 25 years into this just isn't up to snuff.
Right.
Not getting it done.
So then, you know, they fight off these speeder bikes and four TIE fighters fly in, which is like, oh shit, what are you going to do against those?
The show does escalate nicely. They have a very nice escalation.
Grief. In my notes, it keeps autocorrecting to Greece. I don't like this. This is not good. Grief. Manages to shoot down one of the TIE fighters, but the shrapnel destroys their gun and it's looking real bad. And they make it to the open, out of this canyon, and Mando flies in with the Razor Crest to shoot down the other three. And he then just like pretty unceremonious goodbye here, just says goodbye to him over the comms and flies off.
I did think that, first of all, it's cool to see the Razor Crest like not looking like a complete rundown hunk of junk.
Yeah, it's all fixed up.
And I really like some of the aerial maneuvers, like his like turn on a dime 180, like, mm-hmm. you know, jousting with this TIE fighter was really cool.
And Baby Yoda straight up super climb.
Yeah. Awesome. Baby Yoda like getting sick on these blue cookies, I thought was funny. And like
and a Capri Sun
in the air.
Does he did he have a Capri Sun? Sucking on a Capri? I swear he stole this whole kid's this kid's entire lunch. Capri Sun, cookies, every bit. I mean, it wasn't that healthy to begin with, so maybe did him a favor. But yeah, asshole.
Yeah, I just thought Baby Yoda like acting like this is a roller coaster was pretty cute. And then the Mandalorian's oh boy when he sees him throwing up, good stuff.
And I like the trench run that these TIE fighters are doing. Right, it's like the reverse Death Star sort of thing, flying down into this canyon.
Star Wars and trenches. Name a more iconic duo.
All right, the New Republic is investigating Mando's presence on Navarro, but Grief can't seem to remember anything. He's just forgotten it all. Mm-hmm. This New Republic...
Fuck 12 is what he says. I don't care if they're riding X-Wings or Marauders. I don't talk to him.
That dude, the New Republic... I think... Did you say this is the same guy who was following Mando before?
Yeah, he was with Fellini. Go. Yeah, he was Fellini's co-pilot. And it is weird to me to see dudes in X-Wing pilot costumes as just cops.
Yeah.
And
I guess if you're flying around, like if there was a special suit you had to wear to drive a cop car, you wouldn't like get out and change and then put on like your investigating uniform, right? You just
that's
wear
true,
that.
But you'd think it would say, yeah, like I'm, and I, you know, that's true. Like the California Highway Patrol has a distinctive motorcycle cop uniform with big boots and whatnot.
Yeah.
But like they still have badges. Like this guy, I think if he just had like a New Republic badge on him, like she calls him Blue, which I think is a reference to him being an officer. I don't know why they don't have like blue, like recognizably police looking X-Wing pilot uniforms, but, I don't know. Maybe they get them real. Maybe the local cops get them real cheap bargain basement prices on these X-Wing and pilots. Like it's a buyback program. Get it pennies on the dollar.
Sure.
Yeah. Makes sense. The local police department has an AT-AT walker. Four X-Wings, you know, a golden planetary defense cannon. Sure, they got it for $5 and change.
the Alliance surplus stores were just overflowing with old stock, X-Wing pilot gear.
Sure.
So this guy tries to appeal to Kara's sense of honor as a soldier to get information out of her. It doesn't work, but he does.
This guy's a recruiter. Recruiter to the outer limits patrol.
Yeah, he's kind of doing a lot here. He's trying to get a win anywhere he can. It doesn't work, but he sympathizes with her because she lost everyone when Alderaan was blown up, and leaves her with a New Republic or Rebel Alliance insignia. They're so freaking similar that I'm not actually sure there's much of a difference at all.
But it was a star. I actually think that is a police badge. I think that's the thing I would like to see him on his chest. And he was like, in case you change your mind, here's an official badge that can't be abused at all. you know, and in the hands of a disgraced former shock trooper that's doing some weird gray market shit with her bounty hunter boss buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. But I did
if she
like
wasn't
this,
LARPing Marshall before, she sure as shit is now.
I also really liked the idea of the New Republic is like completely in denial about what's going on out here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's like, it reminds me of like the return of Sauron and Lord of the Rings. Like, oh, there's shadows of rumors, but all the important people like, oh, there's no way. It's just some kind of minor bullshit. But it's like, it's this, you know, we know what eventually happens in the movies. So the New Republic ignoring this seemed like a mistake. And I wonder if there is going to be, like, if these X-Wing pilots, these Border Patrol, these Mountie type guys are going to be a bigger part going forward.
Yeah, could be. Speaking of a big part going forward, oh boy, this final scene has the internet abuzz with implication. There's an Imperial officer who's informed that their plan to plant a tracking device on the Razor Crest has been carried out, and she relays that information to Moff Gideon, who is happy to hear that he still has a bead on Baby Yoda here. The biggest thing that I saw going on in the subreddit is talking about these dark troopers, or what people think are dark troopers on the wall here.
Yeah.
I know these are a thing from the old Star Wars Dark Forces video game from the days of DOS, like ages and ages ago. And honestly, like this whole Imperial base adventure that we go on feels a lot like that game in a lot of ways.
Lots of running through corridors, shooting at stormtroopers.
Yeah, for sure. And even like those raised platform type bases, like it just a lot of it, really reminiscent of that. So dark troopers, do you know anything about dark troopers? Because they were in that game.
Yeah, there was the dark troopers were a line of what you thought were combat robots. And the first two, like there's three phases of dark trooper, the phase one, phase two, which are combat droids. And in phase three was these hulking kind of like exosuits, like power armor kind of thing, space marine shit that was going to be like the next generation stormtrooper armor. And it like, you know, super tough, tons of, and they were just real ball breakers to fight in the game. And it feels like they're going to take that and combine it with some kind of weird cloning slash force blood transfusion to have like these force sensitive dark Sith mechanized stormtrooper forces. That is very cool. I mean, that's Star Wars as hell. Yeah. Like that's like very Star Wars Legends. Like, you know, what's a Hutt do when he gets the Death Star laser? He puts it in a big cylinder and calls it the Darksaber or some shit. Like, you know, this is you take two great Star Wars flavors, dark troopers and force sensitive clones, which they fucked around with a little bit in the original Timothy Zahn Thrawn trilogy. Yeah. And you get whatever Moff Gideon's working on. So looks cool. Looks very like, black, shiny stormtrooper combat frames. Very sexy. My son's a big fan. Looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Yeah, and I think that's why we're talking about, you know, Baby Yoda being sort of the linchpin of that plan. Like, although I think you probably could get by with just some badass mechanized exosuit wearing stormtroopers.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, like they're still badass. They're still like, one of these is worth 100 Alliance troopers. Mm-hmm. They're just not going to be able to force choke people.
Right.
And, you know, then Gideon cuts you in half with the Darksaber. He wants that force sensitivity.
Yeah. I wonder if he wants it for all of them or for himself, or like, you know, that's the question. Like, is this the experiment stuff that's eventually going to lead to Snoke? Is it like, I don't remember much about Snoke's background from the movies. I've seen them each one time, the new trilogy.
Right. He was just deliberately like a clone or like a clone puppet for Palpatine to kind of like take the heat off of him while he was reconstituting his power.
Yeah, so I can see some kind of fucked up, experiment gone wrong creating him.
And then maybe they get that right for late Palpatine. Season Mando that you see like a whole bunch of Snokes in a tube. These kind of were not Snoke.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in their like how pale they were and kind of the general body shape. Yeah, you might be onto something there. You might be.
We'll see. But that's the episode.
Hey, before we get to the episode proper, a brief programming note. Because of the holidays here in the States, we have Thanksgiving, and the week after, I actually have my wedding anniversary with my lovely wife, Cecily. And because the Mando does release very early on Friday morning, we're not going to be able to have that same day coverage that we have up to this point. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to be releasing our Mandalorian episode the Monday after. So like Mando drops on Friday, you got Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we'll record and release our episode. So, sorry. when they release on the Black Friday and in the middle of my wedding anniversary, I got very little moves that we can do to make that work. So
it's the risk you take when you decide we're doing holiday release stuff.
Yeah. I'm altering the deal. It's the way. You know, you thought it's going to be the one way. It's the Mando way. So we'll have those out. It'll just be a couple days later on Monday. And also give you a bonus is it gives you a little bit of time to get feedback through on this episode, because we had this very fast turnaround. We don't get a lot of feedback on the episode itself. So it'll give us a little bit more time to get some thoughts together. So next 2 weeks, Mando will be not on every Friday, but every Monday. And then we'll get back to a regular schedule up through the Christmas. So just want to let everyone know.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends, and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We are then now going to consider feedback. If you'd like to send us feedback on any of these episodes, you can do so at mando@baldmove.com. First up with Scott says, I'm really glad you're covering The Mandalorian this season episode by episode. Thank you for the coverage. It's great. Our pleasure.
Yeah.
No mention, or I'm surprised that there's no mention of love for Titus Welliver last episode. He was guest starring as the Imperial officer, Mr. Welliver marks another Deadwood original cast member to feature on the show after Timothy Oliphant and W. Earl Brown, who also guested in Justified with Tim, of course. If this trend continues, who's your pick for who you would like to see from Deadwood, the Deadwood cast? If Ian McShane shows up and calls Mando a loopy cunt, I'll lose my mind.
For sure.
That's not going to happen in a Disney production. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, some dank ferric versions of that might be nice.
Yep.
Jim Beaver would be cool.
Sure.
He could be like I could see Moisture Farmer.
And he's Jim hot right Beaver now. He's screams in The Boys.
Moisture Farmer. Yeah, oh, he was. Yeah.
He'd be a great Moisture Farmer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the guy who plays Worm, Brad Dourif, the guy that plays Wormtongue in Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
He would be a great, like, minor or major villain.
Yeah, like some Imperial officer.
Or a Sith wizard. I mean, because that's other things. Like, how long does Moff Gideon keep going after Baby Yoda before he finds some kind of minor Jedi? And it's like, well, it's not Baby Yoda blood, but it's at least got an M count. I wonder... You know, like
or track him down, right? Like, you're not a powerful enough Jedi for my experiments, but track down Baby Yoda.
Ah, yeah.
Because there is some kind of like force affinity where they can sense each other, right?
Ooh, or if they got like force twins, like a Luke and Leia situation where it's like whichever stronger, they've drained its blood. And it's like, if you want your sister or brother back, you got to go bring us the child.
Oh my God.
So then you've got, like a Jedi, a motivated Jedi. Mm-hmm. Trying to track down the child, that would be interesting. Somehow we got off of Deadwood dream casting onto just off the cuff theory crafting.
What's the guy who plays the politician, the guy who comes into town in the movie?
Oh, the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the J.P. Morgan or somebody like that.
sure.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him. I just like him. I think he's a great actor.
Anna Gunn? See, Anna Gunn, that's the other big name I can think off the top of my head. She'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe she's the armorer.
right. She takes off and it's
Skylar fucking White.
Love it.
She runs the armory like the AAA car wash, baby. Tight, 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 tight.
Mm-hmm. That's why she's got all that cash laying around.
That's right. She's got Beskar to spare. She's got pallets of it. Spraying it for Beskar lice. Tyler H, very excited you two are covering The Mandalorian. It's come to my to the point where my television viewing experience is incomplete without a review from Jim and Aram.
Wow.
That's high praise.
It sure is.
It's real high praise. I appreciate that. The first episode of The Mandalorian was very good. I was happy to hear you both agreed. One point I particularly enjoyed was seeing more of the Tusken Raiders and their culture. I'm a movie-only Star Wars fan, and whenever the Tusken Raiders entered a scene, they are portrayed as evil, bloodthirsty monsters with no motivation except for the enjoyment of violence. It was enjoyable to watch a Star Wars episode where these beings were portrayed in a civilized way and given a culture, backstory, and motivation. However, the outcome of this unveiling of their characters gave me some really weird feelings about them kidnapping and torturing Anakin's mom in episode 2. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on this? Well, I hear tell that some of the old Star Wars stuff is legends, and that prequel, midichlorians, like, did anyone ever buy that as canon? I mean, come on. Come on.
When you're sweeping shit out the door, when you're the Disney execs, and you're going, okay, we've got so many backstories, so many years of content built up, we got to sweep all this shit out the door. I feel like you've overlooked something if you're not sweeping the M word out the door. No, I have never met a Star Wars fan who was an actual fan of the midichlorians, either as a word or a concept.
I think Fellini and Favreau just think they're to the point where they've gone mad with power. Like, we can make a Baby Yoda Boba Fett thing work. And you know what? We're gonna rehabilitate midichlorian. we're gonna have Star Wars fans united in midichlorians thinking that midichlorians is the wave of the future, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. But a straight answer is they're an alien culture. And they probably got good parts of the culture and bad parts of the culture like every other culture does. And, you know, they sometimes kidnap and torture settlers. Maybe the settlers had it coming. through some perceived grievance, because it seems like there's not a really great relationship between the human colonizers and the OG Tusken Raiders. But yeah, they do some bad shit. As do all sentient creatures, it's apparently.
We call them Tusken Raiders. I feel like the Raiders part is maybe something we could start to leave off their name now. They're just Tuskens, right?
Like, Tusken nomads, yeah. Uh-huh.
The Raiders part is like the slur that the humans who have settled there have given them.
Their territory. And the thing is, I never figured out, like, are Jawas and Tuskens like the original inhabitants of Tatooine? Or are they... So. Settlers like everyone else, and just like they tend that, like, you know, they're from a desert planet, so they take to this planet like, you know, ducks to water, or I guess the inverse. like a desert lizard takes to a desert.
Sure, the duck takes to no water. Yeah. I always assumed that like Jawas and Tuskens were the indigenous species there, and that all like the civilization that sort of landed around that has you know, sprung up as a result from the alien influence, but like, sure. I'm not sure of that. It's just something I've assumed.
Because yeah, I mean, if they're the original inhabitants and they're a little territorial, and every once in a while they raid the settlers because they're encroaching on their territory, that's a lot. It's a lot easier to understand than you know, if they're just like fucking, you know, they just stay. They can't. You know, they got nothing going on their own. All they can do is steal shit. You know, that's a lot more of a negative attribute for a species, I guess. Daniel R. I will admit out the gate, I'm one of the biggest Star Wars nerds out there. I have read all the books, the canon, the EU, the shows, the movies, etc. All
Damn,
of it. All of it.
A lot of reading.
I think at one point I had read every Star Wars and seen every Star Wars thing. And that was at some point in the end of the 90s. And then, I forget what.
What about? I think the thing that broke me is the novelizations of the prequels. Like, yeah. I was never going to read those ever. Like, I read the novelizations of the original trilogy and found it to be a waste of time in general. But then to go and read the prequel novels, no.
Mm-hmm. I tapped out halfway through the Yuuzhan Vong War. That's okay. Where I started to be like, I don't need to read every one of these books. And then I do think I did read the novelization of Revenge of the Sith, though, because I wanted, like, that was like my, like, I could feel my Star Wars fandom like hanging by a thread. And I'm like, I want to, you know, everyone's talking this up. I just want to, I want to get ahead on whether I'm going to be disappointed or not in this thing. So I remember reading it. And I think that's the last Star Wars book I read, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I definitely have not read all of the Legends stuff, like all that EU stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Not
a lot
close.
Of comics, especially when you're talking about comics. My God, there's like 30 years with the Marvel comics. Have you read all of those? Holy cow. Anyway, Daniel says, this makes me a bit more excited for episode 4 because of Ahsoka is who I see now.
Here we go.
You let yourself get excited. You let yourself get excited.
No, Ahsoka is a end season reveal. Like, you don't think you're getting Ahsoka next episode. Don't even think you're getting Ahsoka the episode after that. It's
nope.
7 or 8, maybe.
Yeah, like maybe a two episode finale arc is what I'm calling for Ahsoka. Last we saw Ahsoka, she was leaving with Sabine Wren to find another Jedi who went missing during the war with the Empire. With this Jedi should be the brilliant Grand Admiral Thrawn. We actually going to see a live action Thrawn? He's the only EU character to be brought back to canon, so you could go back into so far. So you could go back to his backstory, or since he was the highest ranking non-human in the Empire, you could explore the unknown regions where Sidious is hiding. I would love to provide any context, color, insight to any and all questions you guys may have going forward with this show or other. I mean, yeah, if you see some color that you want to commentate on, go for it.
Yeah, the tragedy of the way we're doing this podcast is I'm staying up till like 5 in the morning the night before to watch the episode and then get up and literally podcast, you know, minutes after I wake up. So there's like a 3-hour window between watching this thing and podcasting about it for me. There's no way I could like send you questions and get answers back and all that stuff. So
yeah. Cause I do this except for I get up at 8 and I try to get watch it twice and compile feedback before our lunch thing. And it's really compressed schedule. And honestly, I don't find myself having a bunch of deep questions at the end of a Mandalorian episode. Like,
I do have a lot
of
lore questions I have to go look up, but
I can look some stuff up on Wikipedia, but like, I usually know where they're pointed or going next. And I have a feeling it's going to involve some, you know, you need this clue to go on to your quest. Well, guess what? I've got to settle. I got a score that needs to be settled. I got a beast that needs to be slayed. I've got a shipment that needs to be protected. I got someone in the jail that needs to be broken out. I got a quest that needs fetched. I got.
Yeah. Speaking of fetching, don't forget about Boba fetching on the tale of Mandalorian.
Sure.
You got to deal with that motherfucker before you can get to Ahsoka. So
you think you're going to get Ahsoka before you get Boba? No. Just because alphabetically she appears before him, I think Jim's right. I think he's in the hopper before her.
I mean, he was teased first, so.
True. Very true. Chris K. from Oregon. Just catching up on your Mando coverage. I've been a big fan of a lot of your projects, especially Game of Thrones, which is why I was shocked in your coverage of Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 2, not to hear a reference to Old Nan's ice spiders as big as hounds. The double D's never gave them to you, but the double F's, Filoni and Favreau, finally did.
Yeah, that's a
book thing. I actually thought about name calling that, but I'm like, yeah, it's like it was a book only thing and it's something we talked about a lot, but it never actually appeared. And also, honestly, I'm a little traumatized by Game of Thrones still. And when I think of Game of Thrones, I think more in terms of like, oh man, it's a shame how that turned out, than oh yeah, I was really looking forward to those ice spiders. But imagine the others, the White Walkers riding those fuckers, man. It's not a good time. Scare a lot scarier than a dragon, in my opinion.
Sure.
Fletch says, your old buddy Fletch from the Walking Dead podcast. If you remember, he's a frequent contributor. And I don't know if you knew this, Fletch, but we actually went back to season 9 of the Walking Dead this year. If this surprises you, you might want to check out the Walking Dead feed, because we did some catch-up coverage of that. I wanted to give you some basic info and ask your thoughts on something my buddy and I at work have been discussing. We felt that the scenes with Baby Yoda and Mr. and Mrs. Frog were designed to do two things. First, to show Baby Yoda becoming friendly with the tadpole, which signaled a change in his view of eating it. We discussed a visual cue of Baby Yoda smiling as he watched the egg hatch. Kind of hard to eat something you just watched be born. I don't know, man. I know a lot of farmers. Both my grandfathers are farmers.
Yeah.
Turns out you can eat stuff with a face. You can even name it and get close to it and eat it, because the bacon still tastes good. Them frog legs so delicious.
Yeah.
Second, something I had not considered was that in shoving that showing that only one egg hatched, the writers were trying to show that only one of the eggs would have hatched anyway, in the process of all the eggs in a jar is like what happens with in vitro fertilization. You take a bunch of eggs and try to fertilize them, knowing only one or two maybe might take. I don't know. I mean, that's a fine theory, but like, you're taking mammalian evolution and you're applying it to amphibian space evolution, because I have frogs and they do mate from time to time, and the female lays a mess of eggs and the guy just kind of squirts stuff all over him, and it's ex vitro. I guess it's like that's just how they roll, like and tons of the fuckers get born. But I don't know, maybe. Or maybe the other unhappy possibility is that they died. Like, she couldn't keep them all warm enough and only one of them was viable.
Yeah.
Because there was a little bit of concern for that.
I mean, I guess, think back to like Jurassic Park and the scene of the, was it a raptor hatching? I can't even remember. It's a compy. I don't know. But you know, where they're all watching it come out of its egg and push little guy, whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't like there were 16 others around him or around this one simultaneously hatching in the exact same stages. I took it to be, we saw the first hatch, and that it is implied that the rest of these will also do that in time.
In my experience, again, with frogs' mating behavior, there's like a span of 2 days where they slowly hatch. Like, you know, you always got the one that's on the sweet end of the bell curve and the slow end of the bell curve, and or popping popcorn. Same theory.
Sure. Or theory, human all babies.
Or human babies. Yeah. Sometimes they come out a little early, sometimes less. Yeah. But the point is, like, the species, he didn't commit genocide because there's a youngling, you know?
Sure. Yeah. He's not killed off an entire race. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think you're supposed to, maybe you're supposed to see this as development as Baby Yoda about like, but I don't know.
I mean, he significantly reduced the gene pool, though. Like, the inbreeding that's going to happen is going to be a lot more intense because of Baby Yoda's snack proclivities.
That second Aggie Horf, that was that frog Albert Einstein. He was going to really make his mark on that species, and now who knows? Who knows what contributions he'll make? Zero. Contributes to Baby Yoda's mass. That's it. Anyway, that's our thoughts on that whole situation. If you have more feedback, more moral egg-based quandaries, more amphibian sexual reproduction questions you'd like to ask the experts, please send it in to Mando at baldmove.com. We will be happy to consider them. There's also Mandalorian threads galore on forums.baldmove.com if you'd like to discuss the episodes as they come out a week in either spoiler-free or spoiler-friendly fashion. They got them at forums.baldmove.com. That's it for another exciting episode of Mando. Next week, we'll be back for the fifth episode. I'm sure Ahsoka will come riding on the shoulders of Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
Game of Chicken style. What will the Mandalorian do? Will he throw Baby Yoda on his shoulders? Will he ride Baby Yoda's shoulders? Find out on episode 5, The Game of Chicken, on next week's Mando. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.